You're listening to the Wordslinger Podcast, Episode 15, Found in Translation with Yannick Nelson. This episode of the Wordslinger Podcast is brought to you by The Lucid, by me, Kevin Tomlinson, and author Nick Thacker. Check it out online at Amazon.com.
It's the Word Slinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand, write your book, redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Hey, how's everybody doing out there in podcast listening land? You know, it's a little bit of a gloomy day here in Houston right now, and I'm not actually in Houston. I'll never disclose my true location. Actually, that's not true. I'm just outside of Houston in the Sugarland area, and you know, if you've never heard of that, that's okay. Actually, you may have heard of a little group called Sugarland, which is country music, sort of a contemporary. I mean, I think they've crossed over to pop, but they actually took their name from Sugarland, Texas. So we got that going for us. Anyway, so today I'm actually talking with somebody who this is an interesting one. I know they're all interesting. I just love talking to people and getting their stories. So, but this is something a little different because. It's interesting to me because it's so similar to what I've done for most of my career, and yet it's a world apart. We're talking today to Yannick Nelson, who is the we've been tinkering with her title, but she's the head honcho at Azugma.com. Azugma is the name of her agency, and what they do is translation and localization, among other things. They do quite a few things. Those are the two things that really caught my eye, really made me, you know, sit up and want to, you know, hear her story. And excuse me for that. And, you know, it's translation is such a weird concept, actually, if you really start drilling into it. Because you're not just, it's not just about getting your words, your English, for example, you know, morphed into Japanese or or Spanish or you know, it's not a letter for letter kind of thing. It's not a word for word kind of thing. There are nuances to that work. The meaning has to go with it. So, and unless that happens, it's really not going to be effective. So, what Yannick does that's very cool. What her people do. Is they do what's called localization, which is, you know, they not only translate the work, but they make sure that the translation fits the culture in which it's going to appear. That's pretty amazing. That's a story all in itself. So I am, excuse me again, I'm having another weird throat day. You know what? Let's just say from now on, Kevin has weird throat days every time he broadcasts. So, I'm going to just go clear my throat for a while, but you guys take a listen to Yannick, and I'm really excited about this one. I think you will be too. It's a great story. It's an eye-opener for me, and probably will be for you as well. So take a listen and enjoy. Hi, everybody. This is Kevin, and I'm with Yannick Nelson, who is the, we're kind of working on your title right now, aren't we? But I like the head honcho at Azugma. That one resonated with me. and Azugma is an agency that, you work on a sort of agency model, but you're more of a collaborative effort, taking on everything from consulting to maybe some copywriting, some design, but and the thing that I'm actually interested in talking to you about right now is the translation and localization stuff. Is that do a decent enough job of summing you guys up?
Yes. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for the intro. That's perfect. Yes, translation is one of the areas that we focus on. Okay. And we offer that, you know, as an individual service or bundled with some other services that might center around, you know, authoring your content in English or making sure you're shaping your content in the right way to shape your audience. And so oftentimes translation comes up in that kind of context, and we'll take that on there as well.
So that was the thing that hit me as somewhat unique for, I think that was my doorbell. I apologize for that. They can wait. So the thing that sort of struck me as unique for what you guys offer, because there are a lot of agencies, a lot of services out that offer a lot of the same sort of work you guys do. But I don't often run across people who do translation work, and it's not just a line for line translation either. This is, you guys are actually going in and you're translating content as much as or context as much as content, right?
Correct. So for us, it was kind of a natural thing to include that in our services. Both myself and one of the gals involved in the organization are born abroad and raised abroad, and so we speak another language, and we kind of, from our personal experience, understand some of the challenges that come from speaking a different tongue or trying to address a group of people in a different language with a different context, with a different cultural background and things like that. And so it comes very naturally when you start talking about marketing with some folks or about their content and them reaching out to audiences outside of the U.S. borders, or even in some cases within the U.S. You know, you very rapidly get to, well, what about the folks that speak a different language or come from a different culture? And so we feel that it just really complements the rest of our services. And it's an area of expertise both for Mylène, my colleague, and myself, because we used to work in the translation industry, and actually she still does. She's been a translator for 25 years, and I think we just really think that it's something that's often overlooked when people are targeting some very niche audiences in the United States or trying to expand their organization, say, to Canada or to Mexico or even further to Asia or Europe or other parts of the world.
Excellent. And how does that, so in terms of the, I always bring this back around to story because that's what we're about, but in terms of the story of like someone's brand or the work that they're trying to produce to reach a specific market or whatever, I mean, how does language impact that?
How does it not?
Well, okay, you're right. That's a terrible question. I guess the question I mean is, how does the translation of a language impact that?
No, I mean, I think it's a very valid question, actually, because people think of these things when they're authoring in English. They've come to understand the importance of content. At least I want to believe that's the case.
Yeah.
And yet when you get to a translation, it seems like that piece of the equation is often forgotten.
Yeah.
When in reality, the challenge is very similar to what we have when crafting content in English. Mm-hmm. You want it to be written in a way that will speak to your audience. And if it's a different audience, it's going to speak to them differently. And you're going to have to choose your words carefully and make sure that it resonates with, say, pop culture in their country.
Yeah.
And make sure that you're not making inadvertently references to things that could be offensive or, considered negative when you're trying to send a positive message. So all of those things come into play. I like to think of these things in metaphors because I'm always trying to explain this to folks we work with and to friends and family. And the latest one that I find speaks really well is, I think we've all seen these little visual illusions where we have these little squares that are two little squares that are exactly the same color, mm-hmm. but they're placed on different backgrounds. And when you look at them, one is going to look darker to your eye than the other one.
Right.
And that's one of the challenges in translation, which is that when you're bringing some content into a different context, so the background color changes, the way that piece of content is perceived will change along with it. And so we work to modify that square so that it comes through as the same shade as the original one, but with a different background.
That's an interesting comparison, actually.
And there's a lot that goes into there because, you know, we're then talking about actually modifying that square of content or that original square of color. And that indicates the necessity in certain circumstances to deviate from the very word-to-word translation that you might see in a technical context.
So, and that brings up a good point, too, because a large portion of what you guys do is that more technical work. It's not like translating a novel or anything, per se. It's more like translating, say, a user manual or something, right?
And so we actually kind of span the gamut in terms of what we offer from a translation services perspective. We do the very common technical translation, mm-hmm. So the user manual or the help document. We do things that are a little, we think of them as a little bit more, lending themselves to a little bit more creativity, such as, say, marketing materials or in an executive speech, you know, where he talks about business philosophy and company philosophy and things like that, all the way to, you know, an essay or a novel, if that happens to be the realm that you're working in. And I kind of think of that as a spectrum, where on the first part of the spectrum, the technical side, you tend to stay very word-to-word, very literal in your translation, because even in English, most of those documents are not terribly sexy. It's right. Not about the poetry. It's all about the functionality. It's all about making sure that you plug the widget into the right widget on the other end.
Right.
And so we, in that circumstance, we go for a very straightforward and very literal translation. And then all the way at the other end, on the side of, you know, literary translation, then you tend to have a lot more license.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps you translate the characters' names and their background into something that will take place in the country that you're translating for, or perhaps not. Or, you know, you have a lot more license in terms of how you shape the character and how you choose your words, and there's a lot more attention that's given to poetry, to rhythm, to conveying the right feel and emotion. Mm-hmm. So it's more about making sure that you're trying to provide the same experience to the reader rather than necessarily the exact same content.
Yeah, it really all comes down to that context of the story, right? I mean, you're trying to make sure that whatever language you're translating into, it goes beyond the language. It involves the culture.
Absolutely. Yeah, and when we're translating marketing materials, it's always a fun challenge. You know, how do we maintain a brand? How do we let that brand voice speak mm-hmm. through into a different language?
So how do you, I assume you have a set number of languages you'll translate into, actually, it says any language. It says
yes.
You can translate any language.
Yes,
because... So how do you do that cultural... do you have people that you call on in various cultures who can do this then?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We work with people in the United States because there are some tasks that are best carried out in person mm-hmm. or when you're in the same time zone. But really, for anything that requires any kind of cultural shaping, we make sure that we work with people who live in that target country, who speak that language day in and day out, who experience the cultural and political and economic context at all times, yeah. and who can really help us shape that message. And so it's a very kind of dynamic process where we work here in depth with the client, and we work to really understand what they're trying to convey and who they're trying to reach. Mm-hmm. And then we find just the right person to work with in the target country.
So walk me through this a little. So like, let's say that, you know, I hire you guys, now I'm an author. So let's say I hire you guys to translate one of my books into German. Mm-hmm. Or let's go a little further afield. Let's say I want to go all the way to like Chinese, which I to me seems like it would be much more difficult because there's not only the language barrier, but there can be, in terms of culture, there are a myriad cultures in China, so it's not mm-hmm. a universal. So, you know, what's the process in working with me to you know, to get my book into Chinese?
Well, you know, we
keep throwing those monkey wrenches at you. I'm sorry.
No, it's awesome. This is great. These are the kinds of questions that we get from clients all the time.
Oh, good.
And you know, one of the things I love about translation is that it's always evolving, mm-hmm. and that there is always more than one answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Because there's so many ways to tailor our work specifically to what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
And so if you wanted to translate a novel into Chinese, we would, you know, talk to you about, well, what's your goal with translating this into Chinese? Are you just, you know, trying to get your work out into a broader number of people?
Yeah.
Or is there something specific in your book that you think would be compelling to a Chinese audience?
Okay.
Do you, you know, refer to traditional Chinese history in your novel and you think it might resonate with some parts of the Chinese population? Or is it just, you know, you're trying to broaden the horizons and you have a personal affinity for China, so that's where you're going next?
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, that's a, and, you know, I would find that those would be challenging questions for me to answer, actually, as mm-hmm. a client, because I, from my standpoint, I mean, I'm a born and bred American who's, I've actually not been to China. I've been to other nations and other continents, but I haven't been to China yet. So I wouldn't particularly know how to answer that. Would you, do you guys provide like guidance? Like if I said, here are my goals, like primarily as an author, I'm going to say my goal is to reach this target demographic, people mm-hmm. in this age range, but that may all skew and shift depending on the culture of that place. So do you advise on that sort of thing?
Yes, we do. I mean, we have to.
Yeah.
I'll veer off from the Chinese example for just a moment.
Sure. That was out of the back of my skull anyway. You go anywhere you want to go.
But, you know, it's a frequent common request that we get as a client that comes to us and says, you know, we'd really like to translate some of our content, some of our materials, our marketing materials into Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very common request because we have a large Hispanic community in the United States. We have neighbors to the south that speak Spanish. And as you continue further south in the continent as well. But if you turn to Europe, you also have Spanish. Well, all of these areas have variations in the type of Spanish that they speak.
Right.
Idiomatic expressions are going to be different. Again, cultural, political, and economic background is different. And so when we have somebody who comes to us and says, well, we want to translate into Spanish, we ask all the difficult questions, and sometimes they know the answer, and sometimes it's just the beginning of the conversation, and
right.
it can be, you know, the first engagement from a consultancy point of view, where we work with them to determine, is it really Spanish they should be translating into, and if so, which flavor, mm-hmm. which locale, as we say in our jargon. And the translation world is an odd little place where we even create artificial languages.
You gotta go into deeper detail on that one.
Well, in the case of Spanish, and this is something that's driven by business needs.
Mm-hmm.
People will often want their content to be understood by the broadest number possible.
Yeah.
And the translation industry has developed a concept known as international Spanish, or sometimes neutral Spanish, which it's not really accurate. It's kind of a shorthand. But what it is we ask our translators to write in a language that is accessible by the broadest number of Spanish speakers around the world. So avoiding idioms and avoiding colloquialisms and other, you know, regional or local expressions that they might have a tendency to slip in. So we kind of strip the language of some of its geographic characteristics or cultural characteristics to make the content understandable by the broadest number.
Yeah.
It's a trade-off because, of course, as you do that, you lose a little bit in terms of the flexibility you have with words, in terms of how, we'll say, how savory you can make the the content. You know, it can't be quite as spicy because we've now removed some of the expressions that make a language spicy.
Right. Interesting. Invent a language.
From a business perspective, when you're translating a user manual, for example, it works very well.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah.
So probably not for a novel, but most likely for a technical.
Yeah, I could see where it would be a little more difficult with the novel. Novels are interesting creatures anyway, so which is why I've been paralyzed on the idea of translating to other languages so far. So, but when I get there, I may have to ping you guys.
I would love to talk to you about translating your novel. I mean, there are many different ways to go about it, and the way authors relate to their content is interesting. I mean, Nabokov is a well-known example is a well-known example of somebody who did most of his translations himself, mm-hmm. because he wanted to make sure that the way the words were changed still conveyed the meaning that he had intended to.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that speaks to the fundamental challenge of any translation, which is you have a third party looking at content that has been created and trying to convey that to somebody else.
Yeah.
So that means that translator, that intermediary, is doing the best they can to make sure they understand the original meaning. But right. We all know from reading books that sometimes what we read into a book is not what the author put into it.
Well, that's true, yeah. And that's certainly true of my stuff. I get readers who sort of pipe up with, you know, hey man, I really loved the metaphor you used here, and it was just some random statement. I had no metaphor in mind at the time, but now I can kind of see what you mean. Yeah, sure. but you know, I actually had a whole conversation with some other podcasters actually, and they're all self-published authors, and so we're all. I have someone basically translating my work into audiobook format right mm-hmm. now. And their choices are very different than what I had in mind. But I discovered that I would, you know, I would be better off letting go and letting them sort of drive and making that story, you know, because they have a little bit of ownership in it themselves. So I'm letting them have that ownership in the interpretation of that story. And I imagine it would be very similar. I would be very comfortable with that, with a good translator, if I got to know the translator well mm-hmm. and knew that they got the concept at least. You know, here's the idea. So I would see that there's a kind of component of the translator as storyteller in that.
Absolutely. And I think you just touched upon something that's very important, which is that good translation is born out of really good communication yeah. with the person who authored the original content.
Yeah.
And this is true no matter what type of translation we work on. Really having access to that original content creator and being able to have a conversation about what is it you mean here and why is this important and how do you feel about us, you know, tweaking it this way? And can we convey it in this manner? Do you feel like we're still doing your text justice?
That sounds like an exciting process, actually.
It's a very exciting process. It's where the creativity is born.
Yeah.
It's I think a place where there is so much exchange. It's also where there's some really delicate choices that are made. You know, we have say one word in English, or one word is being used in English, and we'll have three equivalents in French. Which word do we choose for the translation?
Right.
And those equivalents might. You know, those words in French might not have a translation that exists in English to help you as an English speaker understand the nuances. And so really working with your translator to help him or her choose just the right nuance in French is going to be really important.
And therein lies the difference between you guys and something like, you know, one of the translation services like Babelcube or, you know, the services that do sort of a crowdsourcing version of mm-hmm. this. I mean, that attention to the nuances is what I think, as an author at least, that's what I would be looking for. Now, when it comes to more technical work, what sets you apart from, is it the same distinction when it comes to more technical work? Like, You know, would someone be better off going? Clearly, you're going to say yes, but I mean, would someone really be better off going with you guys over, say, Babel Cube?
Well, you know, I think Babel Cube is an interesting example. They cater specifically to authors. It's mm-hmm. it's a lot more geared towards. I've seen mostly novels there.
Yeah.
And a lot less technical type of works, although I have seen one or two.
Yeah.
I think that when you're translating a book, you really are better off selecting an individual translator, getting to work with them, getting to know them. Maybe even, you know, getting a few other people who speak that language to read their translation work and give you some feedback, because of course, we select people who do an incredibly good job at translating, but it's just like reading somebody in English. You may recognize that they do quality work, but not feel like it's the right voice that they're mm-hmm. giving you. You know, we have preferences in our authors. We have preferences in our translators. It's normal.
Yeah. You know, okay, something just occurred to me, and it's going to sound silly when I say it, but I think you'll catch on to what I mean here. But what about translating? Let's say that I wanted my book to go to the UK or to Australia, mm-hmm. which is, these are English-speaking countries, so...
Absolutely.
But the cultural differences are there.
Yes.
And I believe, actually, that... J.K. Rowling, actually, okay, so you were going to bring, okay, you know what? I'm going to let you talk now. Go ahead.
No, I'd love to hear what you were going to say about J.K. Rowling.
I think that she actually had her books translate, I don't know if she did, the publisher probably did, but had the books, the Harry Potter books translated for American audiences, which in some cases was a little on the offensive side, I got to be frank, because, you know, the idea that American audiences are too dumb to know what a Philosopher's Stone was, for example. Would you guys do something along those lines? Like, that's a more cultural translation.
Yes. And so if you actually read the Harry Potter books, I actually bought most of my Harry Potter books in the UK. And, they've got all the extra vowels in there, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and they've got a lot of different expressions than the American version of the books do.
Yeah.
And you know, if you consider yourself to be well read and you enjoy the Britishness mm-hmm. of certain works,
yeah,
then I actually recommend getting a UK copy. It's a slightly different experience.
I bet.
And I think it's very compelling that they translated into American English, and because historically, I guess, the U.S. is more comfortable with different varieties of English.
Yeah.
Whereas Great Britain tends to be more resistant, especially to American English. And that's changing significantly because so much content is being created in American English.
Yeah.
Very few organizations now take the time to adapt that to British English when they go into the UK. They just send the American English materials and, our fellow Brits just deal with it. I think that... You know, your comment about it being offensive in certain circumstances, I get that. But I also think that the main target audience were kind of younger kids.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure that you're talking a language that they can really relate to and get into. And you know, as anybody who's read the Harry Potter books, we all know it's kind of like candy. Once you start, you can't stop. And I think that part of that happens because it is so relatable.
Yeah,
it's a complete, you know, it's a completely made up world, and yet we all visualize it, we all feel it, we all experience it, and I think that the reason they chose to translate it is because it really furthers that experience for their main target audience, and you know, kind of older folks like us who aren't quite letting go of our childhood yet, we can order from Amazon UK.
Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah, the Sometimes. Harry Potter books were really difficult for us to get, for me to get anyway, in the UK version. So I don't know why, though. I don't remember why. I think there were some trade issues or something. I don't know. Who knows?
I can't remember. I know that, you know, they were selling so fast. There were all sorts of issues.
Yeah.
I just happened to have been traveling in Europe and was able to get my hands on a local copy.
So it's interesting, though, that you're right. There is a in the U.S. we're much more tolerant of variations in English, as proven by any given number of posts on Twitter and Facebook. just from spelling alone, but the notion of going the other way, I kind of like the idea of, you know, writing something and then having it translated to a more British standard and then mm-hmm. releasing that as the book. That would be kind of interesting.
Just well, forgo the American version. You could definitely experiment with releasing a British version of a book, both in the US and the UK, to see what happens.
I wonder if that would, like, boost my author cred. assume I was British at that point.
I think it's going to depend on who your audience is, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Because there's some people who are going to think it's really cool and nifty, and there's some people who are going to say, oh, you know, what a snob. He didn't even bother to, you know, take all those extra U's out for us.
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be that one crowd of people that is constantly pinging me about all the misspelled words because I left you in there.
So a lot of the organizations that we work with are businesses. They're not authors, and for them it's a business decision. You know, is it worth the cost to translate or to edit a text into a different variety of English, or is that cost going to, you know, offset any, say, service calls we're going to get, or the annoying calls to customer service because they don't understand what the boot of the car is, or
which I could that now I could see that as being an issue. I didn't know what a boot of a car was until several years ago, so I would have been confused by that.
It's something that we encourage people to test out. Speak to people who are in that country. Yeah. Is it going to be confusing to them? Is it going to make sense? Is it going to sound? There are times where it would be perfectly understandable, but for whatever reason, it's actually important that that company be perceived as not foreign. Or well integrated or well assimilated into the local culture. And so in that case, it probably is worth adapting to British English or Australian English or whichever, you know, part you may be targeting.
So do you think that English itself is becoming a little more homogenized?
No. No, I think, you know, English, to start with, English is a very interesting language.
Yeah.
First of all, in the last several decades, English has really, really become a central language. It's what we call a relay language, where many, many, many people speak English, even if it's not their native tongue. And so when you're trying to translate from one language that's kind of, say there's a small number of speakers and there are few people who author content in that language, mm-hmm. and you want to translate that into another language that's distant and very different, but also in a similar situation, you oftentimes have to go through what we call a relay language in order for that translation to happen, because you may not have a translator that works from Inuit to Thai,
right?
But you will probably find somebody who can translate from Inuit to English and then from English to Thai.
Interesting.
So
that adds a layer of complexity.
It does. And you know, we start that the transformation continues every time there's a translation.
Yeah.
So it requires all the more attention as you have layers to make sure that the original and final content really mean the same thing. But English has really taken on that role as a relay language.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think there are a lot of there's a lot of meaning that's transitioning through English in a way that didn't used to be true a few centuries ago. Yeah. And so we're constantly adding meaning to English because we're translating from languages that have concepts that don't exist in English. So they'll be created in English.
Yeah.
Or brought in with the foreign word, but assimilated into the English language.
Which I've noticed that happens a lot.
So English is constantly growing. And English, to start with, is a language that has a vast, vast, vast vocabulary. Yeah. It's much broader in its vocabulary than many other languages. I'm forgetting the figures at the moment. But we have something quite unique in English, which is that and we have a whole vocabulary that's almost exclusively used in written form. Huh. And then we have a different set of vocabulary that is mostly used in oral form. There, most other languages have some of that, but there's a really big overlap between the two.
Right.
Whereas in English, we kind of have almost two worlds, and there's a little bit of an overlap if you do the Venn diagram, but not as much as other languages. And so as we continue to enhance meaning in English, we enhance it in both of those realms. And so we're constantly, constantly adding. And then think about all the different places in the world that English is spoken.
Yeah.
And it's become the international business language, and it permeates scientific publications. So I do think it's become more omnipresent in the last several decades, but not more homogenized.
I actually read that, not recently, this was quite a while back, but I had read that for pilots, there's a requirement for any pilots who fly internationally have to know English. Like there's a requirement by the whatever regulatory agency oversees all of that. I don't remember right at the moment. But so that's interesting. That whole concept of, I'm kind of lingering on it. That concept of transitioning from, Inuit to, I forget the example you gave, but like going from
Thai.
Thai. Yes. Okay. So how do you ensure, as a client, I guess one of my concerns would be, is my message, translating that far? Like How do you assure the client that you're not losing their message in the midst of all that?
By building trust, working really closely with them and making sure again that we really establish that relationship where they're going to hear the questions from any translation, any layer of translation that might happen.
You become like creative partners with them in this thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that is really what we aim to do at Azugma, is we want to partner with our clients. We want to help them come up with the best content for their purposes. And I think we bring in also a lot of technical knowledge that is sometimes overlooked. The technical aspect is sometimes overlooked by organizations. And I think we really try to bring in both the linguistic and the technical skills to make that a really rich and productive partnership.
Yeah.
But I do think that your translators kind of need to become part of your organization in order for it to be most successful.
Yeah,
I think again we can modulate this in many different ways. And people who are doing the kind of straight up technical stuff have a little less of that. Yeah. But I'd still put a caveat to that, because let's say we're translating medical content, for example. It may be a very technical document on how to operate a medical device. So it's very technical in nature. But you need it to be translated with a very, very high level of exactitude and accuracy, because there's so much at risk or at stake when we're talking about a medical device.
Right. The consequences of losing the context there are pretty high.
Absolutely. Or the consequences of just an error in translation.
Yeah.
A simple error, which happens. It will have a much more important ramifications than, say, when we're translating the user manual for your new smartphone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is pretty critical to me, actually. So.
it's critical to all of us, I think. And you know, you want that to be a really good translation, but it's rarely a question of life or death. Whereas when we're talking about a medical device,
well, that unless you're a 13-year-old girl, and then
that's right. Right. Then we know that life is definitely in the balance.
So, what does a zeugma mean?
A zeugma is kind of it's an inside joke, really.
Yeah.
Everybody in our group is an avid reader and likes to play with words, and when we kind of came together, we were all doing some of this work independently, and we found ourselves constantly reaching out to one another so that we could offer bundled services, so that we could really offer the continuum of the consultancy. You know, we come in, we talk about business strategy, we talk about marketing strategy, we look at where that brings you online and what kind of content you might need online or in print, and you're expanding, well, let's see where we fit in translation. So we would constantly call upon one another to complement the services that we were offering in any given project. And so it kind of felt natural to bring it all together. And so when we started talking about a name, we just had a lovely lunch, because we also all like very good food, and had a little bit of wine, and started brainstorming, and all sorts of names and words came out, and we came across the word zeugma, which is a figure of speech. And it's when you enumerate a series of like items or related items. And so we kept saying, oh, maybe we are a zeugma. We are a collection of pieces that fit together, that come together. And, you know, zeugma is the word of the figure of style, but we kept saying it at a zeugma, and it just kind of started becoming a word on its own.
Yeah.
So that's how the word a zeugma was chosen, and sometimes it's a little difficult for people to remember, but we have a special affinity with it just because of that lunch. And we had actually great fun with what are considered to be false zeugmas, where you actually are stringing things together, but that are not of like that are not of similar type. So she went through Germany and a depression. That would be a false zeugma.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun, actually. Very cool. Well, okay. And I was going to try to do one, but I'm not, because I don't think I got the concept in my brain well enough, and I'm going to screw it up. But, we're right at our, time, but I, wanted to give this. So our listeners can check you out at azeugma.com, right?
Correct.
And that's AZOOGMA.com. And, you know, you guys offer more than just translation. I know that's what we focused on, but you guys offer content and design, and you do some consulting and helping businesses kind of figure out what they're, you know, what makes them a business and how to be better at it and that sort of thing. So anything else about a zeugma that you think the listeners might want to know about?
No, I think you've summed it up very nicely. You know, I guess just a parting thought is that we love what we do. I hope that it came across that we really enjoy talking about our work and translation. And if there's anything to say around translation to close up there, is that I feel like we've just started the conversation. There is so much more that we could talk about. And, you know, I mean, we didn't even mention machine translation, which is a genuine trend that deserves attention.
I'll have to get you back on sometime. We'll go a little more in depth then.
Anytime. It'd be my pleasure.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up then. Thank you so much, by the way, for being on. I really enjoyed the conversation. This was a good one.
You're most welcome. I had a great time.
All right, everybody. Go online to azeugma.com. And as always, you can find the link to that in the show notes. And, you know, I'm going to wrap everything up with a little commentary. So, and right about now, You're probably hearing the cool music, which is my favorite part. So thank you so much for being on the show, Yannick, and we'll definitely have you on again sometime. We'll do more of this. All right.
Thanks, Kevin. It was a pleasure.
Take care, everybody. Well, that was Yannick Nelson from Azugma, and she has found a pretty good career for herself in translation. So I think that's and I think that's pretty awesome, actually. It's such a unique, to use a term, it's such a unique field to be in. It's, like I said earlier, it is actually very similar to like what I used to do as a copywriter. And in fact, I've spoken to one of her employees, one of her contractors, about some potential, I was helping her out with a few things, but, the conversation was interesting to me because, it really hit home how similar those two careers are. They both involve, language. They both involve writing. It's just that one is the transition from one language to another. But all the same rules apply. I mean, you want to engage the audience, you want what you say to not only just make sense, but to be engrossing, to be engaging. It's a pretty cool field. The whole idea of localization is something that I think that all storytellers could benefit from. Every time you reach out to an audience, you're essentially doing a translation. When I speak to people, which is a new development, but not that new. I've done it before, but I've started doing more speaking engagements. And whenever I am speaking in front of an audience or speaking in an interview or whatever, the material doesn't necessarily change. All the concepts about storytelling and about writing and about outsourcing and freelancing and that sort of thing, all that stuff stays the same. But I have to translate that for that specific audience. And it makes a big difference who you're talking to. It really does. So with Yannick and Azugma, you got a translation to other languages. But as a storyteller yourself, you get to translate specifically for an audience, localization for your audience. So anyway, that's what I took out of the whole thing. And I'd love to hear what you took out of it. Why don't you tell me? Why don't you drop on by kevintomlinson.com/podcast. And you can actually leave me a voicemail right there from your computer. And you, I'm working on I'm going to put an actual number up because I think that people are intimidated by the callback, the Google chat callback thing. I don't know why, but I'm getting interesting, very interesting responses to that. So, if you have a question for the show, you got a question for one of my guests, I love to pass those things on, and I do. At some point, what I plan to do is I'll organize this a little better so that you can ask questions in advance or something. But I may even start doing a little bit of live recording. We'll work that out. That's one of the goals for 2015. And if you're listening to this, today, the day that it released, which would be Friday, the 19th of December? 19th of December. So if you're listening to it on the 19th of December, then you know that there's a big day coming up next week, which may disrupt transmission for a couple of weeks, actually. I may not have episodes for Christmas and New Year's. It's not that they're already recorded, so that's really not the limitation. But the real problem is that I don't want to release something on those days, and because I do a little bit of a marketing push, I advertise them and everything, and I don't want them to be ignored because these guests are very important. They're important to me, and I know they're important to you because you keep coming back and listening. So I want to give them their just due. maybe I screwed that up. So anyway, hope you're enjoying the show, actually. I would love to hear from you and hear what you think of the show. I really would. I don't get enough feedback. Frankly, I'm going to keep doing it whether anyone ever talks to me about it or not. The people who have responded and have emailed me seem to love the show and its format. And I'm really happy about that. I'm very proud of that because this is something I do. I honestly do this as a labor of love. Now I'm going to work on building a revenue stream for this so that I can keep doing it. And there may be some opportunity for you to help out with that if you're interested. I'm thinking of introducing a Patreon for the show. And, you know, I'm going to work on getting some sponsors that are, some paid sponsors that are in line with the ideals of the show and the values of the show. So if you would like to advertise on the show, let me know. I'm taking on pretty much anybody at this point, authors and other businesses. So, yeah, let me know. We'll talk. So anyway, check me out online at kevintomlinson.com/wordslinger. No, I'm sorry. That's incorrect. KevinTomlinson.com/podcast will get you to the podcast where you can pick up back episodes and catch up a little on the show. There's an RSS feed button there now, which was lacking before. Sorry about that. So if you listen on something other than iTunes, there's the RSS feed so that you can drop it in to Stitcher or whatever you're working on. I'm having a problem with Stitcher. I'm having a problem getting it to just pick up. So I'll keep working on that. It's a work in progress, guys. If you got advice, let me know. Okay, take care of yourselves out there, and we will talk to you. Maybe not next week. I'm not sure. I may release it and then do another whole like push after the holidays so that people can come back and see it, spot it a little easier. I want to make sure everybody gets what they deserve here. So take care of yourselves, and we will chat with you next time.
Wordslinger.